team with high hopes and high expectations deserve high-quality coverage.
Matthews with a shot, score! Marner, score! Wee Willie Nylander!
Good thing you've come to the right place. You're listening to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
You know, it being my hometown is obviously a huge bonus, but to be able to come to a team that has a real good shot at creating some damage in playoffs is something I'm really excited about.
Here's a good chance for Giordano. He scores! Mark Giordano!
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows I'm from Toronto. I love it here. I love my time here, so see what happens in the next, talk to my agent here in the next week. Obviously, I don't think it's a secret that I enjoyed my time here.
And we all still believe that we have a team that's pretty close, and we know we have to take steps to get over that hump, to get by that first round, but I believe in this group for sure. At the end of the day, I want to be here. I love the team, and I wanted to do what I could do to help this team move forward and win.
Two words, AB, to start this Tuesday morning that feels like a Monday morning because it was a long weekend. He stay. That was the narrative over the weekend. If you're a Leafs fan, Mark Giordano has signed a two-year extension with the Leafs worth $800,000 a year. Not like $800 million, what it seems like all the other contracts the Leafs have are. Mark Giordano, team guy, Toronto guy, re-signs with the Leafs. Kyle Dubas said in a statement, everything he does, he has done to help the team win, and that includes a tremendous sacrifice in this contract negotiation. Listen, it came out, people heard $1 million, and then it turned out that Giordano took even less than that, all because he really believes in this team and they're, and wants to be a part of them winning.
Yeah, and you gotta love that, right? You gotta love it. In an era where it seems like a lot of people want to go out and get the bag, get their money, yeah. Gio says, you know what, I've been here, I've been around the block a long time, I've made my money, I want to, you know, give this team the best option. Apparently, this is what's being reported. Literally said to Kyle, you know what, I'm just going to take $800K. You know, I know you offered $1 million, but take that money and put it elsewhere and give us a better chance to win. And that's so admirable. I mean, you just don't see that in today's game. You really don't.
Yeah, and a lot of the, it's hard to compare Mark Giordano signing for this amount versus some of the younger guys who still, like, Gio's made his money, he's had his career,
right.
and now it does make the most sense for him to, like,
yeah.
He was talking about how he had already owned a house in Toronto, he sold it, weirdly enough.
Right before the boom, too. I mean, oh,
that's
be,
a toughie,
gotta,
eh?
Now he's got to buy one. I mean, the market's starting to cool a little bit, but
like, he sold it 2 years ago. I can't imagine what that house is worth now.
Just yeah,
like the way things
bit
are
more.
In Toronto.
A little bit more.
Anyways, this is Leafs Lunch, not Toronto Real Estate Lunch, but big difference now. He was talking about how important it is. Him and his wife are both from Toronto. His grandkids are around. But the most striking thing to me was that we were live on the air when they were doing their locker room clean out and their press conferences. And you and I, before the press conference, both kind of, actually, I'm not 100% sure if you thought this, but I think Gio will re-sign for really healthy Jason Spezza inspired team deal, little extension. And then when he spoke at the locker room cleanout, I was a little bit less convinced than I was before. I thought to myself, okay, he placed a really heavy emphasis on winning there. He said he enjoyed his time, but I wasn't totally sold. So, and especially like just a week after that conversation, has it even been a week since it would have been a week yesterday. So it was like 6 days.
A week
days.
Today. It was Tuesday, wasn't it? Last Tuesday.
Oh, you're right. It wasn't Monday. Yeah. So it was less than a week after that conversation, this signing comes out. I was not expecting this anytime soon.
I don't know if I was expecting it to come down anytime soon, but I think when we originally had that discussion last Tuesday afterwards, I was thinking to myself, well, if you bring back Mark Giordano, you can't bring it back at a market value deal. Like on the open market, I would imagine this guy could garner probably $2.5 to $3 million. I mean, he's a guy who does a lot for your team. You know, he's a third pair defenseman at this point, but he can play on the second pair in a pinch if you really need him to. He can kill penalties. He can play on the power play. He does a lot of things for this Leafs team. And and he had, you know, some success. He elevated guys. But, you know, Timothy Liljegren really broke out once he ended up playing with Mark Giordano, and I think he learned those habits and just the intangibles that he'll also bring in the room. And that was a big reason why I wanted to sign for 2 years, not one. He said being that extra year, it allows him to kind of, you know, internally take on more of a leadership role in that locker room, which I think is great for you know, there's a couple of young defensemen. I mean, you've got Jake Muzzin, you've got, you know, TJ Brody and Morgan Riley. You have some veteran defensemen, but you can never have, you never have enough of those guys. But at the end of the day, I mean, I wasn't sure that we were going to get quite the Toronto Greybeard Jason Spezza special where he just takes league men just to play in Toronto. But that's exactly what he did. Like, I was shocked when I saw that number come in. I was like, 800,000?
Yeah.
There's no way this is a typo. Is they missing the 1.8? Like, that's what I thought had happened. I was like, that makes more sense. Or maybe it was like 1.6 total. Maybe it's 1.6 per year because that would make more sense. Yeah. But no, that's it. A 2-year deal, 800,000 totaling 1.6 million, and Mark Giordano sticking around in Toronto. Too shabby.
He's only 3 years removed from a Norris Trophy. Like it 12 points in 20 games with the Leafs this season.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned how much he elevated Timothy Liljegren specifically when he played with him. So this all kind of, we can walk into this conversation now, like, we were talking a lot right when the season ended about what this blue line looks like next year. And a lot of that hinged upon whether or not Giordano stayed or left. So we know now that he's staying. What does this look like for everybody else now? And we'll keep in mind the two RFAs in Sandin and Liljegren.
So they've got five guys under contract now, right? Morgan Riley, Jake Muzzin, TJ Brody, Justin Hall, and now Mark Giordano. So they've got five guys, and then Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren are RFAs, so they're under team control, and you would think that they'll get a deal done with those guys. And then Ilya Lyubushkin's a UFA, not sure if he returns. We'll see what ends up happening there. But as of now, you've got those five guys. I personally really liked what I saw out of the Muzzin-Brody pairing throughout the playoffs, and I think that could be a real solid second pair. So Giordano goes down. He's a third pair guy, whether or not you want to link him up with Justin Hall, maybe Timothy Liljegren. But now you've got like a couple of options, I guess. The real question is, do you envision all seven of these guys to be on the blue line come opening night? I'm not sure I do.
Like, right.
We could end up seeing some movement here. Because as of now, one of Hall, Liljegren, and Sandin going to be out of the lineup on the outside looking in. But at the same time, do you really trust Sandin and or Liljegren to get those top 4 minutes right now? Like, I'm not sure I'm ready to give them those type of responsibilities quite yet.
I don't know if I am either, but the fact of the matter is those two guys, and I'm just looking at the way we have it set up right now, pretty much the only spot available for those two guys specifically to play is on that top pairing with Morgan Riley. And like you said, I don't know if I picture that. In the same vein, those two guys have to become regular NHL defensemen now. Like, they have to be getting ready. They'd be there on most other teams, right?
Oh, you would expect for those guys to be at least third pair guys at this point, especially the way they play. I mean, Sandin's the interesting one because he's often the forgotten one because he didn't play in the playoffs, right? He's out of sight, out of mind.
Like right now.
We don't, but when he was playing, I mean, this guy was making himself into a regular in the lineup. Like, he was a guy who you're like, we can't take this dude out of the lineup no matter what.
Yeah.
And then he goes down with that knee injury and we haven't seen him since, right? He was healthy-ish during the playoffs, but not to a point where Sheldon Keefe felt comfortable enough to throw him into this series, you know, in the middle of the series.
Well, he was healthy. When I was up in the, I don't know, I forget who I was talking to, but Sandin was talking to some media members.
He was healthy. He was activated off IR.
Yeah,
like, he
that's
was,
what I was
eligible
just
to
say.
Be
like,
played.
He was dying to get into those games, but at the same time understood that it wouldn't have been an ideal time to throw him in. It was a gong show of a series. Not a gong show of a series, but every inch that either team got on the ice during that Tampa Leafs series, we haven't talked about the Tampa Florida series, but we'll get there soon. Every inch they fought tooth and nail for, and it just is not the type of series. Like, he hadn't played since what was it, like
March or mid March,
like February, March kind of.
It was mid March because he went on IR, I believe it was on deadline day that he went on IR.
You're so right. That's a long time, and to be put into a series like that, it's tough. So I understand what they were doing, that but we got way off the rails there with the conversation we were having.
We did.
Who that defenseman is.
The thing that I want, that I kind of want to get into is, like, now you sit here and you look at the blue line, and they have four left shot defensemen who are signed under contracts. Justin Hall, the only right shot defenseman, NHL defenseman, currently signed to a contract right now.
Yes.
So, and Brody, we know, he flips over and he plays the right. So you can say whatever you want there. But Riley Muzzin, Gio Sandin is kind of the way that starts out on the left side. Unless you flip Sandin onto the right, and he has played there in the past, I mean, something's got to give there, no? Like, you think we could see a move at some point with one of these guys? It's not going to be Riley. It's not going to be Giordano. That kind of leaves Muzzin or Sandin to get moved.
You don't think Justin Hall is one of those people, potentially, just as a result of the side that he plays?
Well, I think they
both,
I mean, both, ideally they could move two guys, but I mean, I just look at the left side as a whole,
and
even if you move Justin Hall, well, Liljegren's taking that spot.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, for sure. And I don't even know where to sit with Jake Muzzin right now, because all during the regular season, it was, oh my gosh, Jake Muzzin, where is he gone? And then during the playoffs, he didn't unlock a new level to his game, because we're used to seeing Jake Muzzin be a consistent, reliable...
He looked like Stanley Cup champion Jake Muzzin during the playoffs.
That's what he looked like.
Yeah.
That guy was lost during the season. So I don't know where to sit with Jake Muzzin right now.
Here's why, and there's so much discussion. Do you put Brody back up with Riley? I personally would not. I would like to go out and find a partner that you could put with Morgan Riley. I mean, Ilya Lyubushkin was fine. I think if you want to bring him back, you can have that conversation.
Yeah.
But then also, what are you doing with Hall? Because you got to get Liljegren in there full time. So you could probably move on from him, perhaps. Maybe he's that guy you go up and move with Riley. I know there's people on the 401 who are right now cursing me for even saying that. But I'm just trying to make the puzzle pieces work here. At $2 million, if he could fit on that top pairing, it may be something that they look at. And it's something that Sheldon Keefe did go to a couple of times in the playoffs.
Yep.
When things didn't go well, he swapped Lyubushkin and Justin Hall, and that was a pairing that he felt comfortable with. Whether you do or not, it's not our lineup card. It's Sheldon Keefe's. But I almost feel like if you get that top pair defenseman on the right side to pair with Riley, you can keep Muzzin and Brody together. And the only way to get that, you could go out and potentially make a signing. I think Josh Manson's UFA, John Klingberg's UFA, but those are going to be expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can make a splash signing like that without making a move here. But if you want to go out and get a younger guy, or maybe an older guy with some term who has a decent contract, if you've got to make a deal, I mean, Rasmus Sandin, to me, I almost wonder if now this Giordano deal's locked up, you got Riley, Muzzin, Gio down the left side, does Sandin become expendable? And not expendable because he's not good enough,
right?
But that's the piece that you can move. You got to give to get, right?
That's a pretty sexy trade bait, I would say.
That's what I'm saying,
yeah.
Brooksy. Like, that's what you can get. I love that line, by the way. Absolutely love that line. But like, that's the type of player that teams are going to be asking for if you want a top four defenseman, or you want a top six rugged winger, like we've heard reported that the team wants to add.
Right.
They're not going to want Justin Hall, all right? They're not. They might not want that. I mean, they might, but that's not going to be the main piece. You got to give them something sexier. And Rasmus Sandin kind of fits the bill, and it's not that he's pushed out here on this team, but if you can add in other areas that are a little bit weaker, like the right side or up in the top six, that's the guy I'm kind of looking at right now.
Okay, I understand that completely, especially since, and this might just be as a result of timing, like Giordano and Liljegren just kind of established that great rapport,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure that Giordano, like, every guy that he plays with, and people say this about TJ Brody, the guy who Giordano was playing with when he won that Norris Trophy I mentioned a couple of years ago, but I think that Giordano elevates his partner, so I'm sure that him and Sandin, if roles were reversed and Timothy Liljegren was the one with the knee injury who missed the second half of the season, we could be talking this way about Timothy Liljegren right now. But to your point, it's just circumstances. It does kind of feel like he's become the expendable piece.
Yeah, and also, in order to make that move, though, I think you also have to establish, what can Mark Giordano give you? Is he going to be a nightly player who can play 82 games in a season? So far, he has been that throughout his career. He's been extremely healthy, and he hasn't really tailed off a whole lot. But he's going to be 39 when the league year starts, or when the season starts next year. can you pencil him in and guarantee him 80, 82 games? I mean, I guess you can give him just some rest down the stretch, just like we saw happen with, you know, Matthews and Riley at times. But can't you pencil him in at 39 years old? And if you can, then I think you can have those conversations. But if you're not sure, and maybe he ends up being a Spezza or a Simmons where he comes in and out of the lineup, then can you really move on from a guy like Rasmus Sandin? That's the only thing that kind of, I think, is a bit of a holdup. You have to know what you have in Giordano before you make that move.
Yeah, so if Zdeno Chara and Andy Green, who, yes, is still playing in the NHL. Andy Green's like the most forgotten NHL captain in the league, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like,
who's he
just
captain
like,
for now? Is he still out in the Devil's Island?
I don't know. He just gets forgotten about so often. Like, it's the most tragic thing in the world. Anyways, if Andy Green and Zdeno Chara retire, the only defenseman older than Mark Giordano in the league next year will be one Duncan Keith of your Edmonton Oilers, at least for right now. So, yeah, he's getting up there on the age side of things, but I don't know, AB. I don't know. I think you're right in saying that they have to figure out exactly what they have in Giordano and how many games they can get out of him. But I don't see it as a huge concern right now, and he did his best to really emphasize that in his post-game, in his signing when he talked to the media. He said something along the lines of, as soon as I feel like I'm not contributing positively to a team anymore, I'm going to be done. But he likes where his game is at right now. And honestly, he didn't look a step behind or anything like that at any point.
No, and I think that's what if you're Kyle Dubas, you're happy knowing that you're bringing in Mark Giordano back, who didn't really fall off.
Yeah. Right? Are we nervous right now because we just saw such a steep kind of decline in Jake Muzzin this season, and now all of us, and we're feeling better about it, of course, because we mentioned how good he was. But that was a steep, rapid, oh my goodness, decline.
There was a lot of injuries involved with Jake Muzzin,
totally.
Which I think goes hand in hand with it, where that's not necessarily the case for Mark Giordano. And, you know, he just played such a high level of hockey. I mean, you look at his 20 games that he played since coming over to the Maple Leafs in the regular season, had a 60% expected goals, 57% scoring chances in favor of the Toronto Maple Leafs when that guy's out there. And, you know, this is a guy, this is at 5-on-5, but, you know, he also had a positive expected goals. And this is a guy who kills penalties.
Right.
He's a guy who can be your power play, your PP2 quarterback. And potentially, I remember talking with Frankie Corrado about this during the playoffs, and that one time they put Giordano on the first unit power play, and he liked the change there, liked the look, because it kind of can throw the other team off a little bit, and it's like, okay, is this guy going to be a shooting threat? Do we need to cheat a little bit, or can we still go out and play man defense, essentially, on Austin Matthews? Mm-hmm. And by doing that, they end up scoring a goal on that power play. So he's a guy you can also kind of filter in and out of that top power play unit, which just it's another added value that he brings, and all for $800,000.
Yeah, Sheldon Keefe, I remember him saying he puts out a lot of fires for us, and I think Sheldon Keefe said something like he's never nervous when Gio's out on the ice. He's a really trusted defenseman.
Yeah,
plugs a lot of holes. Great signing for the Leafs. Like I wasn't sure that this was gonna happen. I especially wasn't sure because it feels like every time a player, there's such a big spotlight here in Toronto, and I don't know, you and I were talking about this when we were talking about Strip Club Gate. I don't know if you guys saw on Twitter this weekend that the Florida Panthers, who were swept yesterday, got zinged, apparently, allegedly, a couple of them were cited out at the bars late night in
not
between
the
their back-to-back. Yeah, not great. Yeah. I don't know. We'll talk about that. But I'm talking about the spotlight in Toronto, and we were talking about how if that happened in Toronto, there would be riots.
Oh,
people would be hanging off the CN Tower if Austin Matthews was spotted out at the bar during that Tampa series. But I digress. My point here is that when people have really good stretches in Toronto, they generally sign a handsome deal somewhere else. Like the way that Toronto can't put anyone on waivers without them immediately being claimed.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'll take that nice special treat. Thank you, Toronto Maple Leafs. So I was looking at Giordano and how drastically his numbers improved from when he was drafted in the expansion draft by Seattle, playing on a garbage rat team, and then came to the Leafs. The Leafs had an awesome little stretch here. I was thinking, okay, somebody's going to hand him a deal that is a little bit too good to pass up, and I'm sure that would have happened.
Absolutely.
He wanted to be a Leaf.
Yeah.
The man wanted to be a Leaf.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, left money on the table. And that's, I think we have the audio here of Mark Giordano talking about kind of the belief that he has in this team.
Team, I believe that this team is is a contender, and that was my first stop. But then all the rest that comes with it, me being from Toronto and it being a really, really great opportunity for my family and all those thoughts went into it. And we came up with obviously a deal pretty quickly.
And they did. And the rest is history, and hopefully one day Mark Giordano will move all the way up in Corwin's, who gets to hold the Stanley Cup first rankings because of this deal. Okay, I know we have to go to the break. We're gonna have Darren Dreger on pretty soon here. But AB, I leave you with this question before we go. Do you think there's any chance that this will set even the tiniest amount of a precedent for some of these Leafs players when they go to re-sign their respective deals? I'm saying this because I saw someone float Austin Matthews' next deal will look like $15 to $16 million.
Yeah.
And they're going to have me playing left wing if that's the case.
Yeah. Oh, that's a loaded question. Let me think on it. Let's get back to this a little bit later in the show. Maybe it's something we can even ask Darren Dreger if he feels like that could potentially set some new precedent here in Toronto, something we haven't quite seen in a while. But you kind of thought that with Mo, like maybe Morgan Riley's deal was the tone setter, and now guys are starting to fall in line. Perhaps maybe we can get into that with Dregs on the other side. So that's what we got cooking on today's show. Darren Dreger coming up in about 5 minutes. Jamie Rivers from St. Louis going to join us to talk about what's been going on between St. Louis and Colorado, and then Luca Celebre from Bar Down joining us at 1:30. I'm Mike DiStefano with Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
Matthews has done it again!
Now, back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Welcome back to Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. Julia Teixeira and Mike DiStefano still with you. Mark Giordano signed a 2-year extension over the weekend at a very healthy and even delicious 800K average. We weren't expecting it to be so low. He took a bit of a, not a bit, Kyle Dubas called it a tremendous sacrifice in his contract negotiations. And before we went to break, I threw the question out to AB if he thinks that it could potentially inspire some healthier contracts in the future for the Leafs. Let's bring in our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger. So I'll throw the question to you, Dregs. I asked AB before the break, Well, first of all, let's just start with this contract. Were you surprised to see him sign, one, so soon, and two, for so low of a number?
I am not surprised he signed as soon as he did. You know, when Mark Giordano got traded by the Seattle Kraken, the Toronto Maple Leafs coming home was high priority for him. So, you know, given the experience that he had, a little bit disappointing, of course, losing to the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. But he's more or less home, and that's important to his family. He's at a place in his career at 38 where he doesn't have to chase the contract or the money anymore. So it's about comfort, and it's about winning, and he has both those things in Toronto. The only way the Maple Leafs could make it work is if it was going to be extremely team-friendly, and it is. But let's not feel sorry for Mark Giordano. Yeah. Yes, he made a sacrifice. And this is as hometown a discount as you're going to get. But he feels like he is a good fit with the Maple Leafs. And as he talked about, I mean, that second year is valuable because it gives him a little bit more presence going into next season, right, where he doesn't feel like he's just being rented as a veteran defenseman. You know, his emotional investment to not only winning but helping develop some of the younger players is going to be higher because he knows he's going to be around for a bit. But, you know, Mark Giordano is financially comfortable, no question about that. And he's in a place where he wants his family to be and a place where he thinks he can still contend for a Stanley Cup.
Our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dreger, on the phone. So I'll ask you the question that I asked AB. Do you think that there's any potential that this could maybe set up the opportunity for Kyle Dubas to get some healthier contracts from his big stars in the future after seeing some veterans make a sacrifice? I'm thinking specifically about re-signing the Mitch Marners or Austin Matthews of the world.
Probably not. You know, but that's a tough comparison to make,
it's
too,
true.
Right?
I mean,
you know, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner aren't going to be 38 when their current contracts expire. And the reason that Austin Matthews, you know, would have coerced the Toronto Maple Leafs into the 5-year term is because, you know, he wanted to manage his contractual future moving forward. See where the team is. I'm not in the camp that believes that Matthews is simply going to bolt in 2 years. I don't. I think that he's committed to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I believe that he's committed to winning with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but that has to happen. And if it doesn't happen, well, maybe a year from now we're having a different conversation and we're looking at his future with 1 year remaining on that contract a little bit differently. And then you've got Marner following behind him. You know, I look at Jack Campbell and the fact that he's a pending unrestricted free agent. When you get to that place, you've earned your right to explore all opportunity and where you're best fit, be it from a competitive perspective or from a contract perspective. You know, Jack Campbell right now deserves the opportunity to make the most money he can. He's earned that right to explore. Now, when you get to the conclusion of Matthews and Marner's contract, yes, they will have made enough money to that point. But again, it's age sensitive. Both their deals are age sensitive. Why wouldn't they chase if the opportunity is there, a longer term or a better financial fit? But I think it's also unfair to be looking into that crystal ball at this point. How do we know what the salary cap is going to be 2 years from now or when Marner's right. contract expires? And the one thing I do know is that the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, see a long future. It's not lip service when Kyle Dubas comes out and says, you know, he wants Austin Matthews or Mitch Marner to retire as Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, that's great, but those players are going to earn their dollars. And if the salary cap allows the Toronto Maple Leafs to pay Marner and Matthews or Jack Campbell what they're worth, then they're going to get paid by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Money is never going to be an issue outside of the salary cap for the Maple Leafs. Now, Campbell, of course, is different because he's a pending unrestricted free agent. But, you know, when you look at the birth certificates and the contracts and the money earned by Mark Giordano, just because he took a friendly deal doesn't mean that the others are going to do that. Jason Spezza has taken a couple of years now of friendly deals, you know, from the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's just that where they're at in their career and the fact that they want to finish their career in Toronto.
Well, Dregs, with Gio coming back, now the Leafs have seven defensemen under team control, including the young RFAs, five being left shot D. Now, that's a, you know, you could argue that that's maybe one too many. Would you imagine that the team rolls with that deep of a left side next year? Do you think we could see a move or two on the blue line? I know Jake Muzzin's name has been talked about with some people. I wonder, too, about Rasmus Sandin potentially to use as a trade bait to maybe bring in a bigger name as well.
Well, look, it's fair to speculate and wonder on those names because of the depth that they now have on that side. But I can also build a case where the Maple Leafs blue line gets weaker by moving either one of those players. You know, do we really know what the Toronto Maple Leafs have entirely in Rasmus Sandin? I think we can see the upside, right? We could see the trends developing, the fact that it looks like he's going to be a real good player. But can they wait? Are they convinced that he's ready to take over a role that they're going to need if they decide that, no, it's Jake Muzzin that is the odd man out here? You know, Muzzin, there's a lot of miles on that chassis. There is. I mean, he didn't get enough credit for hanging in there and coming back and playing and battling the way that he battled against the Lightning in the first round. He didn't. In fact, I'm a bit surprised that he didn't opt for surgery, but, you know, he's going to continue to try and rehab the upper body issue that he has. So there's that concern, right, from an organizational standpoint. You know, based on the type of game that Jake Muzzin needs to play to be as impactful as he has been and he can be, he's got to be able to block shots. He's got to be able to be physical. But, you know, it's not like Toronto is overly worried about that, and it's not like teams who have watched Jake Muzzin play and be a very good NHL rock-solid defenseman aren't also aware of the same issues. There would be a trade market, I believe, for Jake Muzzin, but it may not be as high as what some people think. And is his value, you know, as important to the Toronto Maple Leafs as it might be based on the rate of return? And again, I can make a case for both those players, Sandin and Muzzin. But as you go into what could be a very busy offseason for most clubs, Toronto included, those are problems, but those are real good problems to have.
Yeah, it will be a busy summer, and obviously Kyle Dubas already got started in signing Mark Giordano. What do you think if you're Kyle Dubas is the next thing on your checklist? Is it Jack Campbell, the goaltending situation in general, maybe trying to get those RFAs locked up or looking at any of those other UFAs that the Leafs have?
All of the above, right?
Yeah.
You look at Ilya Lyubushkin. I don't think anyone expected the influence that he was going to have and the ability to play up in the pairings. You know, he earned a trust from Sheldon Keefe relatively quickly upon arriving in Toronto. I feel like he's probably a luxury, though, right? I don't know that Toronto is going to be able to afford him, but again, it depends on how much wiggle room they have and what they do on that blue line, as we talked about in our previous conversation here about Muzzin and Sandin. I would be interested in exhausting that opportunity to bring Lyubushkin back. But priority has to be goaltending. It just has to be. You know, Jack Campbell was really good for the Maple Leafs when he finally got healthy, you know, played well down the stretch, had a real good first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't know the specifics of what the ask was for Jack Campbell from Jack Campbell and his representative prior to the start of the season. I just know that it was a contract, and the parameters of that deal were too rich for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, has it softened? I think it would have had to have over the course of the year. You know, when Jack Campbell was healthy after the first 15, 20 games, you know, his stock dropped and dropped in a big way based on his play. And, you know, then unfortunately for him, bad luck, he couldn't stay healthy. But, you know, let's focus on recent history and, as I said, how well he played. And then you look at what's available to you on the open market. And what's available on the open market isn't that great, is it? You know, there's uncertainty, there's concern. I think we talked about this last week. So I don't know that much has changed. I think the only way that the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have interest in extending Jack Campbell is if the dollar is just too high or the term is unrealistic. And maybe you don't know that. I mean, Toronto's got to wait for Kurt Overhart and Jack Campbell to come to them and say, look, our intent is to go to the open market unless you can get somewhere in this vicinity in term and in money. But let's not be critical of Jack Campbell if the Toronto Maple Leafs don't like what that term is or that dollar is. Mm-hmm. You know, as we talked about with Mark Giordano, different place. Jack Campbell, this is his opportunity to make some money. And I don't think anyone should begrudge him. If Toronto can't pay what he thinks he's worth, and they know or believe that somebody else is going to step up, he might not go into the right fit or the same fit opportunity that he has in Toronto to win, but that's up to him to decide.
In conversation with TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger, the Battle of Florida lasted 6 days. Dregs, a whole whopping 6 days. Panthers swept by Tampa Bay, only scoring 3 goals in the entire series, which is wild considering that Florida was the highest scoring team in the regular season. I mean, has Tampa Bay entered Dynasty Chat yet, or do they need to pull off the three-peat to get there?
Well, I think you can have that conversation for sure. I think it would be ignorant not to at least consider the potential. You know, they're heading to the Eastern Conference Final. And for me, that in you know, the salary cap era has to be considered dynasty-like. And if they win 3 consecutive Stanley Cups, without question it is. You know, it's just how they're doing it, right? They're seemingly unflappable. You know, they deal with significant injury. In this postseason, of course, it's been the absence here of Braden Point. But they find a way for others to step up. Since Nick Paul eliminated the Toronto Maple Leafs with his pair of goals, he has just continued to ascend in the lineup, right? I mean, John Cooper has no issue in playing Nick Paul as a top-line forward. So, you know, they've got the depth in that organization. Andrew Burnett of the Florida Panthers going into their game to avoid the sweep made it as clear as possible. You know, he felt like Tampa Bay Lightning's will to win was greater than the Florida Panthers. And if that didn't adjust in game 4, then the series was over. I think it did adjust. I watched that game very closely last night. Florida played a strong game. They did. Sergei Bobrovsky was good. Now you can look at the controversy. That really wasn't, but you had back-to-back reviews that disallowed goals. So maybe there was more drama in that game than what was expected. But Andrei Vasilevskiy was just terrific in that series. And Mike, as you pointed out, the run support wasn't there. You know, you can't beat teams if you're not going to score goals. It doesn't matter what time of the year it is, but it's amplified in the postseason. And the Florida Panthers, inexplicably, they just could not get their offense going when they needed it most.
Yeah, I agree. They played an awesome game yesterday. It looked like it was going to be at least a five-game series. And even with those couple disallowed goals, the Florida Panthers couldn't make it happen. So, Drags, I ask you, where do they go from here? When we made a pressure list ahead of the playoffs, AB and I think I had Florida right at the very top, mostly because of how they cleaned out their draft closet and really went into win-now mode. So what does the future look like for the Florida Panthers?
I still think it looks good. You know, Toronto has been down this path, maybe not quite as aggressively. But, yeah, it comes to a point where you got to stop moving draft picks around the trade deadline to try and improve and chase the cup. But I can appreciate why Bill Zito and the Florida Panthers did that. But, you know, they're not losing their key elements. You know, Sasha Barkov is going to be a superstar player for years to come in Florida. Jonathan Huberto, he's got a contract coming. But he, too, I mean, he's not going to lose a step. They've got the primary pieces there. And Billy Zito is a very creative general manager. So he didn't close up shop at the conclusion of the trade deadline. You know, he's got expiring contracts that he's going to have to deal with. You know, does he think that Claude Giroux was a good enough fit that he maybe wants to have that conversation with Giroux and see if he wants to play the tail end of his career in a Panthers uniform? I think he would. So they've got some pieces that are noteworthy, very interesting. Andrew Burnett is one of the finalists for Coach of the Year for the Jack Adams. And there are some who are wondering about his future on the bench of the Florida Panthers. Fair or unfair? Fair or unfair? And maybe that has to do with being swept by a seasoned coach, John Cooper. Maybe adjustments that the critical media and the fan base thought he should have made to counter some of the things that Cooper and the Lightning did that he didn't do. I mean, that's kind of what you do when you get swept, and particularly when you get swept as a President's Trophy winner. I guess I would wonder, though, is, you know, who's better, right? And automatically what comes to mind is, okay, well, what about Joel Klingel? You know, is he finally going to be let off the mat here? Does he want to return to the Florida Panthers if he's allowed to return first by the Commissioner's Office of the National Hockey League? So those are some of the things that Bill Zito, ownership of the Florida Panthers, are going to have to contend with until they answer those questions with actions directly.
Well, game four, Battle of Alberta tonight. Drags, Flames looking to even the series up. But how the hell do they stop this Connor McDavid fella? I think I just saw the Quizmaster go and write a column on .ca calling him potentially the greatest player ever.
Not the greatest, the best.
The best player ever. The Quizmaster said that, if you can believe it, Drags. I mean, how do you stop this guy? I mean, he's just in a league of his own right now.
Yeah. He is, there's no doubt, and he has elevated his play to an area that, I mean, the rest of the league is unfamiliar with, and that's saying a lot because, you know, there are some great players in today's NHL, in today's postseason. You know, I look at what we're seeing in the Colorado-St. Louis series. You know, you just look around at some of the individual accomplishments. It's been head-shaking to be sure, but Connor McDavid now has taken it to an extreme. You can't shut him down one-on-one. So it's got to be a full 5-on-5 proposition. So as long as Daryl Sutter continues to play the Lindholm line with Tkachuk and Goodrow, they've got to do a better job in that power versus power against Connor McDavid and Evander Kane and Leon Draisaitl. And they haven't been able to do that. So it starts with that group, but I think just collectively you're going to see a tighter defensive effort by the Calgary Flames in game four tonight. And I think you're going to start to see some of the other nonsense drift away in this series. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this on SportsCenter tonight as part of our preview, but it reminds me a little bit of how Calgary started their series in round one against Dallas, right, where they wanted to mix it up, and you saw Rasmus Anderson and John Klingberg get into something, and Klingberg talked about Anderson after that game is not as tough as he thinks he is, those sorts of things that can be distracting. And Calgary initially was distracted in that series, and then they focused and they reset and they said, okay, we're not going to worry about that stuff. We're not going to worry about the scrums and the after whistle nonsense. We're going to play our game. And I think that has to be their focus now going into game four. Matthew Tkachuk cannot be distracted by Evander Kane. I don't know what Andre Mangiapane is doing, but him diving into scrums and putting guys in headlocks and taking penalties isn't going to help the Calgary Flames. Trevor Lewis is one of my favorite players because of how hard he plays. He can't take two penalties per game. He can't. So I think that's the stuff that Calgary is more going to focus on. And then we'll find out. Let's analyze after game four. If Connor McDavid has yet another multi-point game, and Calgary does everything that I've said they need to do, and Jacob Markstrom has a really good game, and the Oilers still win, and McDavid has another multi-point affair, then maybe he's just not going to be stopped in this series.
Yeah, and as the great Daryl Sutter says, stay out of the box. That's how you stay out of the box. You got to stay out of the box.
Yep. Yeah.
So let's hope they do it.
Well, that lends to the question I was going to ask you, Dregs, because the St. Louis Blues headed into last night's game said they weren't going to focus on Nazem Kadri and they were going to focus on getting a win, and they didn't do either of those things. First of all, on the subject of Nazem Kadri, a lot of conversations about him online today and the abuse and the racism that he's been dealing with this. And none of that is okay, but specifically when it comes, it's just terrible, but specifically when it comes to on-ice stuff, like, I don't even know what question to ask you first, because we haven't got to talk to you since the Binnington injury, and then everything with David Perron last night. What did you make of the extracurriculars in the Avalanche Blues game last night?
Well, look, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Nazem Kadri is it. He just is. All the social media nonsense is garbage, just ugly garbage. And I thought Naz handled himself beautifully after the game in just talking about how he has matured, right? He knows the game that he can play, and it's multifaceted. He can be physical, he can be that agitator and get under your skin, he can go hard to the net, as we saw him go hard to the net in taking out Jordan Binnington. But if you get if he gets under your skin, he can also rip you apart offensively, and that's what we saw in that game last night. But, just back to the racial threats and the physical threats, the death threats, all of that, I mean, clearly that's the underbelly of Twitter.
Yeah.
The ugliness of Twitter and social media. But it is such a small percentage of the actual fan base of hockey fans, St. Louis Blues fans, Colorado fans, NHL fans, that it's unfortunate that we have to pay attention to it, but we're drawn to how grotesque it actually is. And you feel for not just Nazem Kadri, but his family, his close family, his extended family here in Toronto. No professional athlete should have to deal with this. Absolutely no professional athlete. I mean, society in general, it's just a constant fight. But I was impressed by how Nazem Kadri handled that post game. Maybe St. Louis could have done a better job pregame of handling it, because clearly it was a distraction for them and everything that Kadri brings to the equation. But I thought that Kadri was a true pro and did a lot of good with his post game remarks.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely deserves full marks, stick taps for the way that he's been able to do it. And then a hat trick of all things as well to go out there and get it done on the ice.
Sometimes the hockey gods get it right. Yeah. They got it right yesterday.
They did. Yeah. They did. Dregs, thank you so much for joining us as always. We'll chat again next week.
All right. Maybe take a nap this afternoon, because it's a bit of a later start. So you guys have to be ready for that one tonight, sharp and on it, and full analysis tomorrow.
I had a lot of sleep. I caught up on sleep during the long weekend, so I think I'll be able to gut this one out. At least it's not, was it a 9:30 start on Friday night?
Friday was tough.
I was looking at the clock, and I'm like, it's 11:30 local time, and this game is still in the third period. Like, that's insane.
I didn't get home until 3 a.m. Saturday morning.
Hopefully. No, not the best at all. Hopefully you get to bed a lot earlier tonight, pal. All right, enjoy the game, and can't wait to hear you on the panel work.
All right, guys, have a great week.
All right, you as well. There he goes, TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger. And it actually looks like David Perron was fined $5,000 for what they're calling a cross check to Nazem Kadri. What about the elbow is what I want to wonder.
Right? The phantom.
What about the elbow?
That was such an attempt to injure, but we know how the NHL is. They'll give him the one fine and say, all right.
Well, I wonder if he was fined for that. Like, are they looking into this? Because to me, that was far more egregious. I mean, it didn't connect. Luckily, we'll get into this in a little bit, but that is the latest update. A $5,000 fine, the maximum allowable fine, that is, for cross-checking Nazem Kadri yesterday. But Naz got the final laugh with the hat trick and the win. Colorado up 3-1 in that best of seven series. And we'll go around the league a little bit. Up next, we got our Leafs lunch, three stars of the weekend. I feel like Naz will probably show up.
Maybe,
here. Might show up here. That's what we got coming up on the other side. Jamie Rivers will join us as well out in St. Louis. We can talk to him about all this type of stuff. And then Luca Celebre from Bar Down as well. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.
This is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here. Leafs Lunch, three stars of the day.
All righty, three stars of the weekend. Let's rip through them. Somehow Connor McDavid ends up at number three. 23 points.
How?
In 10 games. Well, because it was a wild weekend. A lot of stuff happened. Like, we haven't even gotten into, like, some of
the
juiciest
drama of
the weekend.
Can we just give three first stars? Can we just three first stars of the weekend?
Okay. The first star is Connor McDavid. 23 points in 10 games played. We don't have time to play the Kachuk audio right this second.
Well, I also don't agree with it because a guy by the name of Evander Kane scored a hat trick. Leon had 4 points. Hyman has four goals.
Totally.
I mean, it's not just McDavid.
No, so like, much the of the media stuff is like gamesmanship.
Yeah. Yamamoto has a goal here. I mean, yes, McDavid's unbelievable, but he's not the only one doing it. They're actually getting that secondary scoring.
Wait a second. We haven't even told the people what Kachuk said. Kachuk said something a lot. Kachuk said something along the lines of, we've been letting one guy beat us for too long. And based on all of the stats that Al's brother just told you, you know that's not true. But it was some gamesmanship in the media from Matthew Kachuk.
Yeah. Second star, got to give it to Nazem the Dream. Naz, our
what
guy. Hat trick and all after an awful night of you know, what he had to experience, the tweets. I think I saw his wife put on Instagram some of the stuff, the messages.
Getting,
just
it's
gross.
Just gross. And through everything, he's carried himself just like a champion. Didn't fall into any of the antics on the ice last night and made the Blues pay for that.
If anything, it feels like it kind of fueled him to go out and have a game. Just a massive statement.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the credit to Naz. Like, and I feel so bad for the guy because it's almost as if, like, you know that he doesn't want to be a distraction. He's always involved in playoff controversy. And unfortunately, here he is again involved in this. And this isn't even his fault. This is just, like, off-ice dummies just, you know, getting involved. And it's creating this controversy. And he's trying to leave it all off the ice, and he's going out and he's dominating. Just dominating on the ice. A Hattie last night, he was fantastic. And his teammates, too, you know, gave him a lot of love and praise for how he's been dealing with this entire situation. I think you saw he was on ESPN this morning talking about it. He's taking it in strides, and you know, he's such a strong individual. I think he said last night, you know, he's like, look, I'm a big boy. I can deal with it, but it's I want to, you know, we want to eradicate the racist comments for the next generation. So they don't have to deal with it if they may not be strong enough to have it and deal with it.
You think about the next Nazem Kadri playing in the GTHL right now and what those kids have to deal with. And, and that's what really puts into perspective for you and I that haven't had to deal with this stuff in our in our life.
And the first star of our three stars, Andrei Vasilevskiy, a 49 save shutout. This guy's unbelievable. They blank and just sweep the Panthers. This guy's 7-0 in his last seven series-clinching starts. Six shutouts. He's allowed one goal in seven straight series-clinching games. That goal by the Toronto Maple Leafs, I will add. However.
It doesn't take the pain away, AB, but did it, we haven't even really had the conversation. Like, do you feel better or worse? They swept the Florida Panthers.
Let's talk about it on the other side. All right, let's start the next hour. Talk about that. We'll do that, but, like, Just the game sevens for Vasilevsky, 995 save percentage and a 0.14 goals against.
Not human.
His last seven games. It's unbelievable. Quite literally unbelievable. Like, I don't believe this to be true if I didn't see it from my own two eyes. But he gets our first star of the weekend. All right. On the other side, Jamie Rivers, former NHL defenseman and Blues analyst, will join us, as will Bar Down's Luca Celebre. A whole second hour coming up. I'm Mike DiStefano. She's Julia Teixeira. You're listening to Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050.